and you're gone. Welcome to the Shauna Griffiths Show. Thank you for joining us. Shauna will be right back.
What happened?
I was just kicking off your show for you.
Well, that we're gonna have to leave it. We'll have to leave it in as
the recording.
Oh my god, I hope so. I'm gonna totally leave it in, or maybe it'll be my first blooper. Thank you so much for joining today. Welcome to Game Time. As you know, it is my pride and passion to have conversations with impactful leaders, those that reflect what I think of as leadership athletes who have the drive and determination, that sense of self, but also that connection to others, a human connection that I know is so important to our guests today. And so with that, I am going to turn it over. Greg Merrill, thank you so much for joining today.
Absolutely. No, thank you, Shauna, for having me. I appreciate you, you know, sharing the platform and giving me a chance to speak to your audience. And I hope I have some interesting tidbits that will resonate with folks.
I am sure you will. Sure you will. So folks, I'm going to read off a list here that describes our dynamic leader so that I don't forget anything, because he does a lot of big things. So Greg, you're a strategic advisor and a board member, and I know that's a big part of what you do. A business builder, as well as a speaker. We're going to talk about some of the speaking you've done, including your recent conversation that you've been having at South By. You also partner with CEOs, executive teams, family offices, ultra high net worth individuals, and in your brand of one area of your business with athletes and musicians. So you're really focused with all of those on long-term growth. So another growth mind is great to have on the show. You're also a three-time founder, former head of digital transformation at Nike, so just a little bit of a job, a startup advisor, and one of my favorite things that I love when you light up when you say it is that you're a girl dad.
Yes. A three-time girl dad.
Three-time founder and three-time girl dad. Your energy is so infectious. And we were introduced by our mutual friends, Sandra Lopez, who is, gosh, what a remarkable leader. She's doing so many wonderful things. So thank you, Sandra, for introducing us. But your energy really came through in the first time we talked. So tell me first, what fuels you?
It's going to sound super corny to say it, but people and relationships. Right. I mean, I think certainly throughout my career, and we'll talk about it a little bit, partnerships was a big part of how I led my business. And this was both startup and even within Nike, so at a big company. And look, nobody does anything on their own. You know, they never have, they never will. We need to work with partners and other people across all aspects of our life. And so, you know, for me, if I had one tool to wield to get anything done, it would be successful and effective partnerships. And, you know, the underneath part of partnerships is humans, right? And that's where the people part comes in. You know, you will find, and I think most of the folks listening, we work with people that we like, people that we trust, people that we can learn from, people that we have something we can offer value, camaraderie, support, you know, competing or complementary ideas, right? So it's the bringing together of people and humans that makes anything happen in life. I'm going to start there because this is going to be a steel thread through all the things that we talk about.
I love that. So is that also then what you care most about in your daily work?
Yes, I think so. But don't get me wrong. Like I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a builder. You talked about, I'm an executive. Like I want to get things done. I want to be part of the solution and part of building incredible new disruptive innovation. You know, I'm definitely not just kind of a run the playbook kind of guy. If you're looking for somebody, you've got the playbook and it's working for you now, just kind of run the playbook. Look, there's a space for folks that want to focus on that and do that. You know, I think big and I act small. And what I mean by that is, you know, I think of most things in terms of spectrums. So I'll give you one spectrum. The ability to strategize and the ability to execute. I think most people can move up and down that spectrum. I like to think of myself as hyper flexible or agile on that spectrum. So I can go way upstream and strategize and envision the future and think, what if and why not? But I can also bring that down into the day-to-day tangible and say, all right, team, what do we do next? Or what do I do next? What is the next specific step to move towards that vision that I've just painted? And so that I think is what I care about the most. Because I think a lot of times we get stuck in one or the other. I'll give one example, and not to pick on AI, and we're not going to have this be a big conversation about AI, but AI is kind of the shiny metal object in the room, right? And that's not to say it's not valuable. It's absolutely valuable. It's something I believe in strongly. In fact, I was just, a couple of weeks ago out in LA giving a keynote at an AI for retail show that was, run by Ignite GTM and sponsored by NVIDIA. And so this is something I believe in and I talk about. I think there's a lot of value there. But if you start jumping in and saying, what are we going to do with AI for a sports or, application or retail or luxury fashion? And you haven't done the work on envisioning and the strategy and why are we doing this? You've kind of missed the point. And so to answer, to bring it home and what do I care about? Yes, it's people, but it's bringing people together to envision the future and then build it together and in an executional way.
Makes a lot of sense. And the reason I asked you those two things, and I love your answer, is because so much of the leaders that I am looking to showcase, to elevate, as I have the privilege of doing here today, is because you do both things. You care about the people and you care about the business, and you're not looking to almost forsake one for the other. Yes, hard decisions have to be made at certain times. But again, when you take the attitude, the approach to work, that your first answer to me was about the people. And then you talked about what's the most important thing. At the end of the day, if you don't do the business, then you don't have the money to work with the people. But, again, I just love that that was such an authentic answer from you that perfectly hit both elements that are too often separated. Too often people get in leadership seats and they're like, well, I don't really care about the people. I just care about the work. Or you have the, the opposite. Again, thank you so much for sharing. It was a perfect answer.
Yeah. I want to build one thing on that. So another spectrum is sort of short-term versus long-term gain or benefit, right? It's a balance, right? You have to do both. When you look at, publicly traded companies that are, reporting earnings on a quarterly basis, and the CEO is sort of, their neck is on the line in terms of, did you perform this quarter? That is a very short-term kind of timeline to think within. But look, it's the way that kind of business works today. If you do that, but also spend the time focusing on building your people, developing, nurturing, caring, rallying teams around effective leaders across your organization, now you start laying the groundwork for the long-term value that comes from having a high-performing organization with a team of all-star players and with a healthy bench of players that are actively being kind of developed and groomed to take on the future leadership of the company. So it's just another spectrum in there of kind of the balance of long-term and short-term. And to support your earlier point, I think most folks and most leaders skew heavily on the short-term kind of gains.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a perfect testimony to the leadership athlete mindset and theory that people like you exist and lead this way. So thank you for that. And before, I want to get back to AI and dig in there a little bit specific to retail, but in general. But before we do, let's ground folks in. What are you doing? I tried to describe as I opened up our show today, but let us know, what are you doing now and for whom, and what does that result look like?
Perfect. Absolutely. Yeah. Your intro was great, Shauna. So strategic advisory and board service. I've served on boards for almost a decade across many different industries. largely private companies, some public as well. And I think for me, you know, going from a three-time founder where I'm just a very entrepreneurial guy to then, you know, a great career at Nike, which is it's a corporation, right? Let's not forget, they are not a startup. So it's very different work environments. And so my ability and my experience in both of those helps me to now support CEOs, boards, executives of more small to medium-sized businesses. And I typically bookend that by 20 million in annual revenue to about a billion. You know, that's maybe the sweet spot that I play in. There's a lot of businesses in there that need help. And so I really focus now on supporting the executive level to do what? To grow and transform their business. And there's sort of a playbook that I've developed, a framework for success, that whether you're a rental car company, an airline, you're a retail and brand, a luxury fashion house, it, you know, the playbook still largely holds intact. And I won't get into all of those pieces here because that will consume all of the time. But that's the reason why I operate in so many different industries. I do a lot in the sports world, which we'll talk about, luxury fashion, brand and retail, robotics, sustainability, technology, right? So more like hardware and software technology companies. And so that's the work that I do there. Now, family offices, ultra high net worth individuals, folks that are moving from kind of passive investments to, hey, I want to get into startup investing, venture investing, acquiring small to medium sized companies. Great. Those are folks that I'll work with to help them navigate that journey. And then to help ensure that the companies they invest in are leveraging that investment wise. The third thing, and you mentioned, is my brand of one work. And this is, you know, I should probably put a definition out there because this is just a term that I coined, which is to distinguish somebody, an athlete, a musician, an influencer from a corporation, right? So Nike, Adidas, Apple, those are corporations with a brand and with a logo, versus a LeBron James or a Flo Rida or, you know, somebody in that regard that I don't use NIL, that name, image, and likeness, but for all intents and purposes, it's a very similar thing. And so my work with these predominantly athletes and musicians is to support them and partner with them to refine their brand so that they can leverage that with their capital and their followership to build new businesses. And we're seeing a lot of folks do this. I mean, you know, LeBron just launched Lobo as his tequila brand. He's not the face of it. He's not an investor. This is his company. We can look at Skims and Kim Kardashian there. So there's a lot of examples now where folks are moving into this space. And I think the authenticity that these individuals bring to these businesses, and they're like, hey, yeah, I made all my money in basketball, but I also want to be a business owner. I want to learn this. And so that's the type of work that I do, advising and partnering these individuals to build these businesses. So that's kind of a high level snapshot.
And Mick, when you actually told me about the athletes and musicians, I didn't actually see the brand of one until later, but I actually was like, oh, I get it. I love it. So keep it. I highly recommend, as if my recommendation matters, but it's great. So it's interesting to me, though, you went from three-time founder, or maybe it was two when you went to Nike, but you did go in-house to work for a major corporation. That is a big shift, even though, you know, Nike's culture may be different than a lot of others, may be seen as fun and cool and all that kind of stuff. It's still a big transition. How was that for you?
It was eye-opening.
I love that, yeah.
It was unbelievable. I love that word because it's like, what does that mean? Yeah. It could be because unbelievably good, unbelievably bad. I had co-founded three companies before I joined, and one of the companies was a sort of an innovation partner with Nike for a couple of years, and that turned into an unexpected offer to join the company. And for me, it was a good time. You know, I was on the road for my startup. 80% or 90% of the time, mostly in Europe and Asia. And, you know, two of my three girls had been born. I wasn't able to be the dad that I wanted to be. And so when the Nike opportunity came up, I sort of felt maybe this is the right thing to do for my family, right? For a personal decision. And, Nike is a great company. They do a couple things really, really well. And on top of that, the other things, there's room for improvement. And so, you know, to be honest, when I got in, that's where I focused. It's like, what are all the problems that I can solve coming in as sort of not a corporate guy to come in and say, how do I disrupt and kind of, you know, change things from the inside? And so I came into the advanced innovation team where it met corp dev. So anytime, you know, Nike was investing companies, acquiring companies, you know, partnering with companies to create new intellectual property, my team was involved. And so a lot of my time was spent representing Nike externally facing around innovation. So things like new sustainable leathers and putting robots in our factory to, you know, waterless dyeing technologies. It ran the whole company. So it was fun. It was exciting. It was like running a startup inside a big company. Now, by the time, you know, my career had kind of grown within Nike, I think for me, it felt more like I was a bureaucrat by the end of it. You know, it just, certainly the pandemic didn't help things. We were kind of isolated from one another. And I had moved over into the tech side of the house and was leading digital transformation. And it was very much about kind of executive reporting to the board. Important work, but I'm like, I'm a builder. Like, I throw me into the trenches. I want to go and kind of build new things. And that role really was not that. So, but great experience nonetheless. I left last year, you know, intentionally. It was part of my plan to focus on the work that we already talked about, strategic advising companies in the sports and retail space and technology space, because that was just the right thing for me. You know, I had a lot to offer. I have a lot to offer, I believe. And I wasn't able to spread my wings as wide as I needed to staying at the Swoosh.
Yeah. I spent some time at Nike early in my career, and it was to be a part of it, there's something so unique. And it was not a long time in my career. It was the very beginning of my career, but I always am so proud of it and excited by it. And so, you know, there's just something really special, I think. But you're right. At the end of the day, it's still business. It's the same thing. Like, I worked in the NBA family for years, and I mean, I just, every day was so excited to go to my desk and see that I still had a chair. But at the same time, you do realize it really is a business at the end of the day, and that has all these bureaucratic elements. And I love that you go in and say, like, okay, it's also tons of possibility in an environment like that to make the changes that need to happen.
Right. And that's precisely, Shauna, why I focus where I do now, because I'm not knocking on anybody's door trying to convince them that they need to transform or disrupt their business, or they're going to be irrelevant, or that they need to grow or they'll die. They're asking me, no, we know we need these things, but we need some support to do it. And it's a very different dynamic for me versus I'm not convincing anybody of anything. I am now over here partnering and supporting these, you know, athletes and executives on things that they just already know that they need to do.
Yeah. I love your partnering approach. You've said it so authentically a couple of times on this conversation. And, you know, first you were talking about entities partnering, and I was smiling when you said that, because that's always been my go-to. That's where I think we can really exponentially grow whatever we're trying to do. So but when you're talking about working with people, you bring that same approach. It's just so different than stereotypes around know-it-alls and just telling you what to do or leaving you a big strategy deck and walking away. And it's so apparent the way you are leading in your role is by partnership. And it's refreshing to hear.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because sometimes I'll even use the term executive partner more so than, you know, also strategic advisor, but I don't use the term consulting or consultant. You know, I am my I don't have a huge team behind me, and that's by design. I am a, you know, in some cases, a brand of one on my own. And the role that I serve is more, you know, lock arms with these individuals and executives and partner with them to navigate and overcome some of these challenges. More so, you know, I'm not going to go and create something, a deck or a new tool or solution, and deliver it to you. In fact, I'm in many cases against that. I think if an organization deems it a priority, they need to develop that muscle tissue internally. And you're not going to do that by bringing in somebody out from the outside who's going to deliver something, maybe help implement it, maybe not, and then walk away. I just think fundamentally that's a risky approach.
Yeah, that is. The teamwork you're talking about is so much more where accountability will naturally happen. I just really like the way that your approach to it, the way that you talk about it.
Thanks.
Yeah. So quick question. As you were talking about the exchange that you have with them that way, I'm curious. Sometimes that person who's supposed to be receiving that guidance from you, it's really hard for them to do that, or that partnering. So do you have anything that you can share with me if I'm the leader? I might need some help, but yeah, no, I'm not ready for that. Or do you have anything to tell me that makes me understand why it's important? Or, you know, and for the people who are working around me, is there something that you can share with us about how it impacts them as well?
Yeah. So my motto when it comes to this is I meet you where you are, right? And so this is where empathy and emotional intelligence comes in, because, you know, if I come in charging and say, I've got a message to deliver and you're going to hear this, you know, that's about me. That's not about them. And so I do spend a lot of time. It's funny to say this. A lot of the folks that I work with, I consider my friends, you know, and whether you, I don't know, you, whatever position you want to take on that, that just comes through the relationship. And so I think for me, if I meet them where they are, understand who they are, what they care about, what keeps them up at night, where their mind is in terms of their business, like where are their growth opportunities, where are their risks, and then I can help see, hey, there are some growth opportunities you haven't even explored, or there's risks that you're not even looking at that could knock you on your butt in a few short years. So I want to know like what they're looking at and what they're prioritizing so that I'm in a position to share something new, valuable, and insightful. At the end of the day, though, you can lead a horse to the trough. You can't make it drink water, right? And so there are some folks that for whatever reason, you know, we got a great relationship and just now is not the right time to move on it. Maybe they're busy. Maybe they're distracted. Maybe they just don't have the time or energy to allocate towards the work we do together. That's okay. Like there's no judgment. It's just, you know, I'm here, I'm available. We've got the relationship and we'll move at your speed. But when you're ready, we're going to go fast and we're going to go together. So it's not to scare anybody away, but it's like, I'm here to work. I'm here to help and support you. And the speed of the world today is so fast that if you're not moving quickly, somebody else is going to beat you to it. So there, you know, don't hesitate or you'll be dead.
Yes, very true. Nicely, very clearly stated. You know, I doubled down on it because here's the thing. High performing athletes, musicians, these people who you work with and you help them to grow their brands and their businesses, you know what they usually have around them all the time as they continue their career? Coaches, advisors, these type of things. And yet it can be so hard in stereotypically or traditionally for people who are leaders in business to seek that coach, that advisor, that kind of thing, because somehow they think they're perfect or they have to be perfect on their own. So I appreciate you sharing that so the audience can perhaps think about that a bit and think about why that could be important for them or others, you know, and just help to share that. I think it doesn't, people say leadership is lonely. it can be, and it is. At the same time, it doesn't have to be. We can use resources that actually help us to get through and navigate and get to where we're going, to your point, faster. Like the challenges we're facing today are so much, they're coming faster and bigger and more complex than I think before. I mean, I guess you would have said that a long time ago as well, but you know, from my perspective today. So I just think it's really important that people have a better understanding of the whys behind it.
Shauna, it's a beautiful point that you brought up, and I want to pause on it for a minute because there's two elements in here. One is humility, right? And sure, we are all good at certain things. We also all have blind spots and weaknesses. So let's get clear with those. And that leads into one of the greatest skills that I think any strong leader has developed is a heightened sense of self-awareness. And what does that mean? Get really clear, spend time thinking about this, put it on your calendar, pen and paper. What am I remarkably good at? Write it down. You're going to lean into those things. And what am I not so good at, or where do I need to improve? And I'm not saying that every individual needs to be remarkable at everything. You don't, you should not be. You should identify those areas where, one, you need to develop, and two, you need support and help. That might mean you need to make a new strategic hire. Maybe you need a chief data officer and your company's never had one, but it's important because it's a gap for you or for the business. The other thing is, to your point, you know, I forget what the number is, but like Michael Jordan, at his peak, at his prime, he had like five different coaches around him, right? He had a shooting coach, he had a nutrition coach, he had a, you know, and the list goes on. And it was, he was already at the top of his game. And how did he get there? And how did he stay there for so long? Because he had the self-awareness. Of course, he had the resources as well, but he could have said, look, I'm great. I got this. I run my playbook. I'm disciplined. I don't need the help. He didn't do that. He surrounded himself with people that would continuously push him to be better, a better version of himself. And that's one of the things that I nerd out on is, for me individually, how can I get 1% better at something every single day so that I'm continuously in pursuit of peak performance? So whether that's getting a better night's sleep or eating the right foods or staying hydrated, or the list goes on and on. I mean, I could nerd out on peak human performance any day of the week. But having that self-awareness and then plugging the gaps is super important. And I'm not, it's not to say, hey, you need to go out and hire Greg or five Gregs or other coaches and things like that. There are other relationships that you can establish, right? I love having like accountability partners where, you know, you've got that individual and you're working on some things and they're working on other things and you meet every so often, right? That's a beautiful way to kind of have a coach-like relationship, but where it's kind of mutually beneficial.
Yeah. I usually talk about, there's three different things that are involved in this topic that you're just talking about. One, to your point, is awareness. Am I aware of what I'm really good at, what I have a lot of energy for or not, or what I need to work on, right? Then there's the, am I actually willing to do anything about it? Am I willing to schedule a call and do a fact-finding call with Greg? Am I willing to explore, you know, what else I could do? And then there's the actual, do you take the action? Because you can be willing and talk to Greg and then talk to me and five other people, but then you don't do anything about it. I talk about it like that because sometimes people, they know what they want to do maybe or why they may want to do it, but they don't, the how gets missed in there. So you have to go through each one of those elements. Do you have the awareness, the willingness, and then what are the actions that you're going to take and stick to them, make them the practice? But so that's why I try to talk about it that way, which definitely picks up on what you were saying.
It's a great sort of framework. And that last one, did you do it, right? Did you execute on your plan? And that's what separates, you know, I don't want to say the winners from the losers, but like that's what separates those that are hungry enough to go and get the next level, whatever that might mean for you, you know, if it's sports related or business. And there's, you know, there's an element within there that that I wanted to mention around, you know, do you kind of see things through? And this is where I personally struggled with for a long time. I can be overly analytical. I can get stuck in analysis paralysis and kind of think things through and say, I need more data. I need more understanding. I need more, you know, before I can make a decision. And, you know, as I've gotten older and further along in my career, I've definitely improved a lot there and, you know, leverage the Nike spirit of just do it. You know, you're never going to have perfect information. You're never going to have whatever. And then the second thing there is, you know, I love to get on LinkedIn. It's like my social media channel preferred. And one of the things that I do, people will reach out to me cold all the time. And I respond to almost every single one. But why? Because they took the time and had the courage to reach out to me and to ask for some time. And most of these are, you know, I did my MBA at Johns Hopkins in Washington, D.C., and a lot of them are kind of current or former students that, you know, come across my profile somehow and they're like, wow, I'd just love to learn about your career or can you give me some advice, this and that. And I always take those calls and there's nothing in it for me. That's not why I'm doing it. I'm doing it simply to reward the behavior that I want to see more of. People being courageous, reaching out and saying, hey, you don't know me, but I would love 15 or 30 minutes of your time. So anyway, not to like boost myself up there, but I put it out there because I think other people should do that too. Right. And I think that's the human connection and the partnerships that can form when people will just randomly reach out to others.
I'm glad you brought it back to the human connection. That is really important. And I do think there's an element of courage that, you know, I think we're both championing here. I'll get messages from people on LinkedIn and sometimes they'll get the surprise that I responded. And I do think there's something really nice about being able to honor that, share back, and just recognizing that that took courage from someone. Which actually, the topic of courage comes up because as we were talking, what popped to me is that you seem completely fearless. And it's interesting because I was going to ask you, do you feel the fear when you make big changes and you just go anyway? But it was interesting because you talked about being an analysis paralysis. So, you know, it sounds to me like there's some sort of connection between those two factors. So, can you talk to us about that a bit?
Yeah, there could be. Let's get into psychoanalysis mode. I'm teasing. I didn't create this, but embrace this concept of do it scared. You know, I'm fearful. I'm fearful of things. Did I make the right decision? Did I make the wrong decision? Am I being a great dad? Am I being a great husband? Am I being, you know, the family man that I aspire to be? Am I, you know, supporting my partners and clients in the way that they really need it? I have self-doubt. I ask myself these questions all the time. Am I on the right track? You know, I think we all face those things. Talking about them is being vulnerable and being courageous. And that's okay. Good. You talk about it, you get it out of your system, and you do it scared if you have to, but you do it. You do it scared until it's no longer scary. And yeah, probably my analysis paralysis was or is a coping mechanism to try to maintain control over my fear. You know, maybe it was like with just more information or more data, I could get to a point where I was not afraid to make a decision. You know, I love that you picked up on that. And I hadn't thought about it that way, but, you know, thank you.
It sounded to me like you were saying that the data and the analysis you were doing was actually helping to dial down any like hesitation. It was informing and kind of being the catalyst for you to be able to make these huge decisions and, you know, game changing, life changing decisions. So, and thank you for talking about this openly because a lot of times people don't. And, you know, there's this sort of mystery around people and could they do it? And they must be fearless and everything. But again, you sharing that helps us to understand and talking through it helps us to understand the how do you move forward in the face of fear anyway? And I have something that I've kept on my refrigerator for years that says something about sometimes you have to jump and, you know, kind of build your wings on the way down. And hopefully it's not going down too long. But, you know, I appreciate that a lot. Makes a ton of sense.
I love it. No, Sean, I think you've connected some dots here that has helped you. You're my 1% today. You've increased my self-awareness by 1% and connected some dots. So thank you.
You're amazing. I do not have much more time with you here. It's been a really, really good conversation. I think you've given us so much insight into you and how you work. If I can keep you a couple more minutes about just talk about retail a bit. You've had such a run in the retail space. You've impacted retail in such a big way. What are you seeing? What's on the horizon?
Yeah. So, how do I conceptualize this? I'll start big and I'll go small. Retail is kind of an ambiguous word. I define retail just largely as if you sell any physical thing. So that grocery, automotive, t-shirts, footwear, right? So retail is a big space. I think one of the biggest shifts that I'm seeing and that I would encourage anybody in the retail space to think about is traditionally we looked at consumers and we segmented them by demographics, their age, their gender, where they lived, you know, those types of things. And I think there needs to be a broader, a bigger shift away from demographics towards psychographics and the behaviors that people do and make and whatnot. Because I think the world's digital, right? There's online communities everywhere, and there's people from different paths and backgrounds that are coming together around shared beliefs and values and interests that they wouldn't normally come together around just based on their demographics. And so I think retailers must think about their consumer in a completely different way going forward. And the big prize at the end of the day, right? Because all retailers, you typically have some version of a goal or strategy to have the right product in the right place at the right time. Okay, they want to increase sales. They got to do those things. And everybody says, well, the consumer is the most important and we need to meet them where they are. And I just don't think the most retailers are not doing that well enough. And they need to shift the way that they think about this, which also will shift the capabilities needed to really do this well, which I mentioned, like, I think as an example, chief data officer earlier. You know, data is incredibly important. And if you're in a retail, physical retail setting, data in many cases is limited to at your point of sale, when you're actually buying something and you use a credit card and whatnot. But how about all the other time you spent in the store? What does that retailer know about you so that they can serve you more personally at scale? I'll leave you with two really high level numbers. And these might be off. Somebody can, you know, fact check this, but 40% is the amount of overproduction in retail. That means 40% of all product that's actually made is never purchased. Okay. Think about that from a financial standpoint, huge. Think about it from a sustainability standpoint, huge, right? It's just not good for all the reasons. So we need to shrink that 40% down to as close to zero as possible. The other big number is about 70%. And what is that number? That's stockout, which means a consumer went and was ready to make a purchase, but they didn't have the product. The product was not available to them. 70% of the time, customers are ready to buy something and it doesn't get purchased. So if these two numbers sort of raise eyebrows, yeah, and you're in the retail space and you're thinking, geez, let me go ask my team, what are our numbers? If you don't know, you better find out real quick, and then you better start working on how to change those numbers, because those two things go directly counter to having the right product in the right place at the right time. So anyway, I'll keep that high level because maybe some of your listeners aren't in the retail space. We're all consumers, so we can understand it from that vantage.
Yeah, that is mind-blowing. That juxtaposition is Oh, that's mind-blowing. So I saw you were speaking about AI in retail. And the question was posed around, is retail ready for AI, I believe. So if you can, give us your high level on that topic.
Absolutely. I mean, I teased at it a little bit here, but I was the one who made this bold claim that AI or retail is not ready for AI. And I'll give you one juxtaposition. Physical retail, so you're in a physical retail store or you're shopping on that brand's website. On the website in a digital environment, the brand gets a tremendous amount of data from you. Every time you click and you spend 30 seconds on a page versus 40 seconds, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of data to derive insights from. In a physical store, you have a lot less data. And so how do you one get more data so that you can derive insights to make the shopping experience better? So that's one area where one with AI, if you don't have data, you can't use AI effectively. So in a physical retail setting, get the data first and then AI. The second point that I made, and this was out in Santa Monica, was the unsexy back end. The manufacturing and logistics and fulfillment of physical product, which the customer doesn't typically see, that is actually where I see the lion's share of the opportunity to leverage some of the AI tooling that's available now that's remarkable. For retailers out there, I would ask your team the question, how are we using AI to drive better, better manufacturing and supply chain fulfillment of our, getting our product to the customers? And this doesn't even begin to contemplate like the challenge with tariffs and the chaos that we're feeling there. I don't have any answer for that. I don't think there's AI for for that. Yeah, but maybe there's an idea somebody can figure.
AI idea. Yeah, exactly. Oh,
Yeah.
well, it's great to get that. I appreciate that. And then the other one I wanted to cherry pick from the mind of the expert is you just came off of a talk at South by Southwest, connecting storytelling technology and human connection. And I wanted to make sure we kind of ended on this because it brings that human connection element that has been a red thread, I think, throughout our entire conversation here today. So can you
Yeah.
give us a little bit of what you talked about there?
Absolutely. So the title of this talk at South by Southwest, and we were at this sort of group, let's call it, called Red Thread X, and there was Red Thread X House in downtown Austin. So yeah, good linkage there. And the talk that we gave was called Robots Don't Dream. And I gave this, I recently joined the board of a company called Aventurine, and their CEO, Jan Bozarth, is an incredible creative individual. And the other gentleman on the stage was Mark, and he's an investor in the company. And so what we talked about, though, and this is where I put my dad hat on, because what Aventurine is doing is creating age-appropriate or developmentally appropriate wholesome content for preteen girls. So in a world with TikTok and social media and people worrying about what makeup and, do I look good in a bikini and stuff like that. I mean, I don't believe as a father, as a consumer, there's enough good content and safe spaces out there for like preteen girls to go out and be fun and be creative and be silly and have community with friends without being bombarded with some of these, not age-appropriate messages. So that's what Aventurine is doing. They have, built this ecosystem of content that's developmentally appropriate so that girl dads like me can feel safe and comfortable doing this. And that's why, I joined as a strategic advisor to the CEO and the board of the company was to be part of the solution, to go out there and say, I want to create a world in the future where there's more stuff like Aventurine happening, And so that was largely what we talked about. And it's if you get curious, go check out their website. Dan has written, 10 books that are, I don't know if you have any young women that or girls that listen to your show. If you do, go check out, you know, the Fairy Godmother series. And the world of Aventurine was created through these 10 books that Jan had authored over the years. And so, you know, I liken it to kind of Harry Potter, right? Started as a book series and movies and theme parks and whatnot. It's I think, in some ways following in those, in that journey.
So coming off of you saying that, I am just left smiling inside out at the what you're doing on so many levels is being a part of the solution. When you just said that, that just rang through so clearly to me. And I appreciate that so much because, like, there are so many of us who are privileged in some way or another. And if we don't do the things that are part that create solution or contribute to solution, then we are part of the problem. And it's been something that's fueled me with my show and some of the other things that I do. And I see it in you. And I thank you for it. Thank you for coming and sharing everything you have today. I'm so grateful to know you and to walk the path with you. Any last takeaways for our audience today, Greg?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Shauna, thank you for those incredibly kind words. Yeah, I think maybe the call to action or the takeaway building off of what you said is, each of us as individuals, as humans that we connect across nothing more than our humanity, is we get to vote with our feet and with our wallet and with our mind space and our attention. I would say if you do everything you can to be part of the solution, whatever it is that solution, that vision, that utopia world that you want to be proud of, you know, so that you can look back, and if you have kids 10, 20, 30 years, look back and tell your kids with pride, this is what I spent my time doing. You know, it's not becoming, you know, incredibly wealthy and, you know, this and that. Sure, if that's part of your destination or journey, beautiful. But what are you proud of, the legacy that you left behind? Are you proud of the fingerprints on this earth that will be here long after you're gone? And if you're not, it's time for a change.
What a great way to end. Thank you so much, Greg. Appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Have an awesome day.
Thanks.